Welcome to another edition of Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to make your dreams come true, to be able to live your life in a fuller way, we certainly hope. It's what we want. That's what I'm striving for. Grab, as one of the commercials says, all the gusto you can without the imbibing necessarily, although I'm not saying that's prohibitive. This program comes your way every Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. It's broadcast live on the Internet, streaming from richarddugan.com. And we talk to folks who are coming from a wide variety of perspectives and orientations. My guest today, he's basically an upbeat, industrious, intelligent, responsible, and synergistic generalist. We'll find out what a generalist is. I don't think it has anything to do with the military. Also, someone who can do a lot of things well. He's capable of basically bringing diverse elements together and making them into a cohesive whole. Maybe he can help this show. As a Renaissance man, which, by the way, is somebody else's descriptive phrase of him, he has a PhD, he's a nuclear physicist, he's a teacher, a metaphysician, a futurist. He is a writer, prolific in that, a humorist, especially in puns, and he also has basically a sense of humor. He's got leadership abilities. I could go on. I won't. I'm going to introduce Dan Ward, who is, I'll say, the author of a website called the Halexandrian Library. You heard me right. Starts with an H. And Dan, welcome to our program.
Oh, thank you very much.
Long list. We would be here all day reading all of your credits. You've been a busy guy in your lifetime thus far.
Yeah, mostly making up those credits.
Okay. Well, I'll take that one. My understanding is you're also still working on humility.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's a tough one. I haven't mastered that by a long shot.
The old song, Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. It's great to have you on the program. Tell me, Halexandrian Library. Now, I know of the Alexandrian Library. What's the difference?
Well, I think this is a couple of things. One, it's not in Egypt.
Okay.
It's not quite as old. It's got an H in front of it, mm-hmm. So that's a couple of reasons for that. One, numerologically, it improves the financial aspects of it. Or at least that was the theory. And also, if you look at it, you notice it's Halexandria, or H-A-L.
Mm-hmm.
It's a internet-based library, so we're in cyberspace. But HAL, the computer from 2001 Space Odyssey, comes to mind. And, of course, mm-hmm. HAL went crazy. That might give you some clues as well.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing, Dan? Well, I love one of the quotes here regarding the Halexandrian Foundation, and it's an old Chinese proverb that basically says, may you live in interesting times. I would say we do, and maybe in one sense humanity always has.
It is true, but there's some information out lately that what you can get in 1 week's worth of the New York Times is more information than people in the 18th century would have received in their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a whole lot more interesting in that sense, information-wise. We just got tons and reams of things coming through us at us all the time, and most of what we spend time now is trying to simplify our lives and get rid of some of that so that we can kind of focus, if you will.
Absolutely. Now, I went through that list of things, and I'm certainly hoping that some of those things are accurate. Metaphysician in particular, are you involved in any kind of esoteric, metaphysical, or spiritual practices, or are you more the scientist, more the pragmatist, the logical thinker?
Well, I'm trying to do a little bit of both, which is another part of the problem of being a generalist, instead of specializing in one thing or the other. I kind of do everything. But, you know, the idea is that there are some spiritual practices and things of that nature that I have gone into and looked into. Some of them I have managed to keep, and some I have I decided to discard and do something else.
Okay. We're going to talk more about all of these different areas and get into more specifics about what's up there. I will tell our listeners the one thing that intrigued me and was the reason I got in contact with you is because The Tree of Life has always intrigued me, just by virtue of the design itself, let alone the contents and the history behind it and all of the symbolism that's there. And we're going to talk a little bit about that from your perspective. We're talking with Dan Ward. He is we'll call you the author of the Alexandrian Library website, and we'll give that website out to you in just a couple of moments. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Stay with us.
Have you lost direction in life? Do you constantly worry or give to others but deny your own heart? Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. I'll inspire and help you find your inner strength to regain clarity and balance in your life. Book your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
Hi, this is Steve at the Endless Summer Bar Cafe, overlooking the boats at the beautiful Santa Barbara Harbor. Remember when life seemed like an endless summer? When a good day meant the surf was up, the boards were waxed, and your buddies had enough gas money to get down to the Rincon? Well, chances are today you spend more time surfing the web than the waves. You hang out more in the boardroom than on the board, and gas money? Forget it. But you can join your friends, family, and us at the Endless Summer Bar Cafe and talk story over fish and chips, or play hooky on a lazy afternoon with an Endless Summer Blonde. Maybe shoot a little pool on the lanai. Or if the gang is looking for a great spot to catch up on old times or to make new memories, give us a call at the Endless Summer Bar Cafe at 564-4666, and we'll help make your party a success. Let us cook the food, serve the drinks, and do the cleanup, and you won't have to worry about the red wine stains on your couch or the tire tracks on your lawn. So we'll see you by the boats at the Endless Summer Bar Cafe, serving lunch, dinner, or a snack from 11:30 a.m. daily.
The 51st Annual Grammy Awards. Don't miss music's biggest night, featuring all music and stars that you love. Beck, Death Cab for Cutie, Gnarls Barkley, My Morning Jacket, and Radiohead are up for Best Alternative Album. Whether you like rock, country, gospel, Hawaiian, rap, or jazz, the Grammys have a category for you. For nominations, go to Grammy.com. The 51st Annual Grammy Awards, Sunday, February 8th on CBS.
Falling by a flooding river, keeping all that fear inside. I understand how trouble haunts you.
It haunts me too.
Yes, and I do know how you feel. Oh, come on, walk with me.
New paradigms for a new world. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story here on a Saturday afternoon. We come your way every Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m., bringing you interesting folks talking about a wide variety of subjects. Basically, we're here to learn, and more specifically, to actively conduct innovative, creative, scientific, and metaphysical synergistic research and utilize over 30 years of experience. Now, I'm speaking of my guest, Dan Ward, 30 years of experience in a wide variety of technical fields and expertise. Interestingly, in as much as it all connects, such efforts are not that hard. And I'm wondering, Dan, if with such an eclectic collection on the Alexandria.org, which is what it is, folks, Alexandria.org, we'll spell it out in a moment, website, it all interrelates. At least it seems as though that's what you have found.
Yes, it is absolutely what I found. I guess I've always known it in some respects, but every time I turn around, I was able to make some other little connection. There are probably 5,000 links inside the library, if you will, from one web page to the next. And then there's a whole bunch of outside links because many places somebody else has taken on a particular topic and said it better than I could say it. So we go to them.
Now, are you still constantly updating the website as far as adding more information? And I mean, 5,000 links. I have enough trouble keeping track of my maybe 150 to 175 links. And you have 5,000?
Yeah, I don't know that I keep track of them as well as the part of the thing is you put them in. Sometimes somebody will send me something and they'll a feedback and say, well, I don't know if I agree with this and blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting there, I wonder where they read that. You know, I really have no clue because some of it, you know, some of it I wrote 3 or 4 years ago.
Right.
And so I don't always know about that, but everything does, it just keeps building. And every time you run across something, you go, oh, that reminds me of that. And then you connect into that.
How does this differ from, say, a blog, per se? I mean, it seems as though it could almost be interpreted that way because you're just constantly adding new information. And sort of a blog is sort of kind of the same thing. This is new information that I've gathered here. Take a look.
One of the things I'm kind of going toward at this point and is to get out of the currency, the most latest news kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest problem with news is that it's never completely accurate. You only have just portions of the information, and we tend to leap to conclusions based on just the slightest little information.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to kind of get things in context and try to put things out there that will be good 5 years from now and 10 years from now and 20 years from now.
Interesting point. As a matter of fact, I was talking with a gentleman the other day, and we kind of shared, we were just chatting away about the current events and what have you, and of course, this one incident regarding quote-unquote, the CEOs of major financial institutions were going to meet in Vegas for partying. And, of course, you know, the president all been out of shape about it.
Yeah.
But when you researched it, turns out it had to do with a bonus package that was given to some of the employees long before the bottom started falling out, who had done exceptional work in some of the fringe departments of this megalithic financial institution. And they had nothing to do directly with, you know, what happened. And so these people now didn't have an opportunity to receive these kinds of bonuses and the accolades that they so richly deserved. And the hotel had 3,000 rooms or something like this reserved. Those were canceled, so the monies were stopped to flowing in there. I mean, it was a whole domino effect in reverse. And yet, had they let them go, it could have stimulated that particular area where they were going to have this gathering. So, like you say, we don't really get the whole story.
Well, we don't get it as soon as we'd like, either.
Well, that's true, too.
Yeah, the things are moving so rapidly. I ran across the other day the fact that I saw something in the New York Times, and then I noticed another copy in the New York Times. It were different. The stories were quite a bit different and modified and everything. It was the same day.
Hmm.
But it was supposedly the same newspaper, but there were two different copies.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know which one was first.
The chicken or the egg? Tell me.
Yeah, but I mean, it was crazy because things are moving so rapidly, and
yeah,
they're updating it more than once a day.
So you're trying to get out of that kind of genre, if you will, with your website.
I think to some degree. I mean, I've fallen into it because sometimes something, I'll read something or I'll hear something, and then I'll start looking into it, and that'll kind of generate something, and it may be just something that's not ultimately going to last that long, and it's probably time to put it away, but it's still, you know, accomplish what I wanted to accomplish, at least for a period of time. But the idea is to get more and more of it so that you don't have to constantly update it.
Yeah.
Because I am doing it. I usually update it and try to tell people on the waiting list or the list of people who have shown interest. And I do it about quarterly.
So let me ask you, how did you get started in all of this? And actually not just in terms of the website, because that's something that came along after you did all of these incredible things, but what was it so long ago that triggered that in you that said, you know, I'm intrigued by all of these different things, and I need to start collecting this stuff because it's important for some reason. And I don't know, maybe you didn't know at the time why it was important. It just was.
Well, some of the things I did a lot of correspondence once I'd kind of discovered email. I had written a lot of letters before and things of that nature. I've always done a lot of writing in that respect. And then I noticed a couple of times that I was saying, you know, from one person to the second person I was reading, I was saying the same thing. And I was saying, well, that's kind of crazy. I need to just have them, here's my latest take on that, and you can read this up and catch up. And so the internet, when you started seeing that from a website, was perfect. I could almost do a conversation with saying, well, go to this website, read that, and then go to this and read that, and then come back.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it was just doing that, just trying to, and then starting seeing the connections. And I think that was probably the thing that was the most driving force in getting into cyberspace, if you will, was that all the way you could link so well. You could have this whole story, everything you're writing, you can always link to something else, like a reference point. But it's right there, totally available if somebody wants to actually look into that.
So you can actually kind of check, sort of check the proofs, as it were.
Yeah.
Interesting. What got you started in the very beginning with all of this, and especially in terms of your Renaissance man aspects, the eclectic nature of what makes up Dan Ward?
One of the things that is in our world today, and I think this is a lot of most societies, there's a tendency everybody wants you to specialize, to focus on something. Even in art, you know, you're supposed to have a particular style, and that's the way they identify a great artist. And people who move around a lot don't get as much attention because they're not specializing and getting down where you can look at a painting and says, oh, that belongs to so-and-so, that's who did that. And I was doing all sorts of things. And when you write a lot, you really want to be read. And so the internet was a way to do that. So you could go all over the place, and people who wanted to go in there with you, even though you had maybe had to give them a little roadmap with links and so forth, but that's fine. Then they could do it.
So you do have a PhD.
Yes.
And you are a nuclear physicist.
That's right.
And a teacher, a metaphysician, futurist. I remember taking a futurist course in college. I still have the textbook, as a matter of fact, so I'm interested in going back to that and seeing how much of that actually came to pass. When did you start taking on that title as futurist? And I ask that question because I'm curious as to what you saw in the future at that point.
Well, I've always looked at it from the viewpoint that I was in energy for a great deal of my career. Built a solar energy house and a bunch of that things, and worked in it for many years. And that was always kind of an energy of the future. And then you start looking ahead, and so you have to see, how is this going to make it? How is it ever going to fly? Wind energy has taken off probably a whole lot better than solar energy ever thought about. But it's doing it. And you have to predict ahead, okay, what are we going to do? We're going to run out of energy at some point. And then as I looked into other areas, I suddenly realized, water, we're going to run out of water.
Mm-hmm.
And water is probably going to be a more of a problem than a lack of energy or a lack of oil and so forth like that. And so you have to look ahead to see where things are going. And then the more you get into it, it keeps ballooning. Supposedly, nowadays, somebody going into college, whatever they learn their first year in college, half of it technologically will be out of date by their third year of college.
Sounds pretty common, especially when you start talking about computers.
Oh yeah, and people are they're claiming now that people graduating from college will end up with 10 to 14 different careers by the time they're 38.
Wow. That is amazing.
I mean, you know, it's mind-blowing in
yeah.
a way, because it is moving so fast. There's so many things changing. And there are some things that are, interestingly enough, more lasting. And I guess that's why, you know, ideally you want to put something down like that.
And what do you see as those things that are more lasting?
Well, how to live among people, I think.
Okay.
Learning some basic things like tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's anything I cannot tolerate, it's intolerance.
Nice.
But, I mean, there's a lot of things of that nature. And learning how to, I guess, treat people halfway decently and at the same time not lose track of what is important to us.
Mm-hmm.
And always be open to change.
Yeah, well, you should be open to change, because that's the one thing that you can count on.
Well, you don't have to, obviously, but it sure makes life a lot easier for you if you are.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not open to change, it's just, you know, you're just beating your head against the wall, because everything is, in fact, changing.
Exactly. Tell me about Dan Ward, the metaphysician.
Well, I guess that was a period of time. I don't know if I would still, I guess I call myself that to some degree, but where you're looking into all sorts of areas of metaphysics and seeing if, you know, if any of it's valid, everything from astrology or numerology to other things, meditations and everything you really can think about, you know, therapeutic healing, all these kinds of things, you know, what really makes sense. And so I have delved into a whole pile of these things, trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. And some of it is, sometimes it could be just what works for me, but not necessarily somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one of the biggest things that I appreciate so much about the Internet is that I don't have to tell somebody else, okay, this is the way you should be living. This is what you should do. All I'm saying is, this is what I'm doing. And if this intrigues you, if it looks like it's good, well, ask me some more questions and I'll tell you more.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't actually have to go out and inflict my views on anybody. But on the other hand, it just sits out there in cyberspace, and if somebody kind of wanders by and sees it, they go, oh, this looks kind of interesting, and they like it, then great.
That's the position I take with this radio program and, of course, the website as well, richarddugan.com. When we do these programs, we sort of we put the plates out on the table. It's kind of like smorgasbord. You take what you want, and you leave the rest for someone else.
Yeah. There's quite a few that I've noticed on websites with that same kind of approach. And to me, it is just so beautiful in a way because everybody's got free will, but that doesn't include the right to inflict yourself on somebody else's free will.
And even in terms of the radio broadcast itself, you know, people can turn it on or just as easily turn it off or change the channel.
And in some cases, they'll tell you why they don't turn it off.
That's exactly right. And sometimes that can be a good thing. Now, we're sitting here talking with Dan Ward. He's the creator of the Halexandria.org website. And I'm going to get back to the website itself in order to be able to tell you that it's H-A-L, as in Hal, E-X-A-N-D-R-I-A. That's Halexandria.org. And, of course, it's a link on my website on the show's page where you'll see this program available for your listening enjoyment after the broadcast is over. We archive all of our programs up there. Now, the Halexandria Foundation is a nonprofit organization. Now, is that categorized under, is that under a religious categorization? How does that fall?
No, it's just nonprofit.
Just nonprofit, okay.
Yeah, definitely nonprofit. We've been able to accomplish that extremely well.
And how long ago did you get that set up?
Oh, that was set up about 4 or 5 years ago. I can't remember the exact date. It may have been slightly more than that.
Okay.
The idea was to avoid, you know, I don't know, just making it a library. I think of always is the Library of Alexandria, and where you just go in and take what you want and look at it and do whatever you want to do with it, but at the same time, you know, not paying for this or not paying for that.
Yeah.
It's a matter of credibility in a way. I mean, you know, if someone's telling you, oh, you really need to do the following, and I happen to have the perfect thing for you, then, you know, well, oh, geez, maybe I don't really need that after all. But we don't really sell anything, any products or services and stuff like that, which is why it's a .org.
Mm-hmm.
And, the Halexandria Foundation was just kind of a way of doing it, I guess, in a legal way, so that we have occasionally received some, you know, somebody gives us a small amount of money or something like that, because they just like what we're doing. We don't really do much fundraising, but, you know, it happens.
So pretty much everything that you post up on the website, halexandria.org, has intrigued you in some way, has sparked something within you that says, I need to put this up there because this kind of fits in there, such as the Tree of Life. Can you give me a little information about what it is for those who may not know?
Well, it goes back to some ancient Jewish traditions. The Kabbalah is spelled numerous different ways, and it shows essentially 10 areas which are sometimes identified with planets and everything else, and this Tree of Life is about mysticism, and it's about the paths between these things, and it's talking about meditating on all these various aspects to really fully appreciate the full extent of life. And that's kind of something is what it's about. And people study it. It's not something easily talked about because it's something you study for, you know, decades to really, really get into it. But it turned out to some degree to be kind of how I organized the library. I started putting things into different areas based upon where they might fit on this tree of life, and it just seemed to work out really, really well.
What are its origins?
Oh, the origins go back, I don't know if anyone really knows. It's been around for 3,000 or 4,000 years, probably at least. At one point, the Christians, after, you know, over 2,000 years ago, started looking into it and had their own kind of Kabbalah and their own little tree of life, but it's the same thing for the most part. And it was just a way of really trying to get into, I guess, a study of philosophy with a certain structure, if you will.
Interesting information on when you start getting into mathematics. So you have a link here called Sacred Mathematics, and you go into several different elements, numerology, astrology, magic squares. I have not heard of, but I have heard of sacred geometry. What are magic squares?
Magic squares are just just a series of numbers that you put into some matrix form in which they add up certain ways. There's one, for example, that's has six columns and six rows. And if you put the numbers in correctly, 1 through 36, then every row and every column will add up to 111. That's one of the most well-known ones.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, even the diagonals sometimes show up as adding up to the same magic number. And so it's just a sort of a mathematical anomaly in some respects. I mean, it could be nothing but sort of a coincidence, something based upon numbers, the way they work. But sometimes it probably means more than that.
How big of an impact does mathematics or do numbers play in, say, our spirituality, as you have found and researched?
Well, I think it's everything. I mean, you know, you can look at it from the viewpoint that I'd have to say that if there's a God, he must be a mathematician.
Mm-hmm.
And probably with a sense of humor. But,
yeah.
But the thing that's intriguing with these things, like take that magic square we were just talking about, that, you know, every column and every row adds up to 111. Well, if you add up all the rows, you get 666.
Okay. Wait a minute.
So immediately, oh, now we got somebody's attention. But if you really investigate the 666, you realize that it not only shows up in Revelations, it also shows up in Kings, the book of Kings, where Solomon, that's how many talents of gold he receives in 1 year, 666.
Matter of fact, I just clicked on the link, and I'm looking at a 3x3, and the way the numbers are placed, they all add up to 15.
Yeah.
Both diagonally as well as up and down, you know, vertically and horizontally.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Now, of course, the next question I'd have is, so what? I mean, so it adds up to 15 in all directions. What is that telling us? What's the message there?
Well, it's... That particular, I'm not really sure if I could give you that one. When you look at all of these things, you look at the geometry and the way that things are located as well as what the number is, how you arrange them, that becomes important. It seems like there's something to geometry that says, that dictates the physical forces of the world. And that's kind of significant. When you realize that things like the planets have orbits, which are connected to each other through geometry, very straightforward geometry. You see, well, maybe the planet can only be in certain orbits, and that becomes extremely important. You find the same thing in quantum physics. You get down to the nucleus and stuff like that. All these electrons around a nucleus, for example, have to be in certain levels. They can't be just anywhere.
Okay.
And it's the same thing. And so geometry actually affects the world we live in, and it affects the forces that are operating.
So is it really magic?
Oh, no, probably not. Magic is usually things, we do something like that, and we call it magic if we don't understand it, but somebody else did it.
Hmm.
But no, it's not really truly magic. But, I mean, it goes to all sorts of things, like Wicca, which what they talk about, they draw a five-pointed star. And that supposedly has some sort of power to it when you pull that star together. And you may not think, well, you know, maybe not, but look how many flags of the world have five-pointed stars on them.
And certainly ours does.
Yeah.
Interesting. You know, the thought, a couple of things here. Number one, I'm looking at these magic squares, you know, and of course, certainly wondering, well, so it adds up to 111 or whatever the magic number is, you know. And I'm wondering how familiar you are with, say, the Bible code. And, of course, they've done the same thing with the original text, supposedly worked it out to where they all translate into numbers, and these numbers all work in some fashion. I mean, now you're talking about some magical Bible code. And that confirms that God exists. You know, I don't know. What can you tell us? What do you know about that?
I know a little bit. I mean, I've read a couple of the Bible code books. I mean, and they've tried to point out all this stuff if you just go through and it shows up. And it seems to be, well, that's kind of interesting. But this idea that numbers and letters are connected is really kind of strong.
Mm-hmm.
There's a pretty good case for it. And so that, and it's been around a long time, and so they actually did assign numbers or quantities to words. And so you do get that. You can get the Bible code. You get all sorts of things of that nature. It just keeps showing up.
Well, isn't it also true that even the Hebrew language itself, the alphabet, has that same aspect to it, that each letter has its own legend and sound or vibration and color and numerical rating and so forth. Then you start putting those together, those characters of the 22, I believe it is, characters. You start putting them together in a context of words. Now you get a whole new tone. You start putting those together in sentences, paragraphs, etc., etc. But when you translate it from its original language to something else, you kind of lose a lot of that.
No, I think you lose a great deal. You have to remember one thing. When they were first translating the Bible into English around King James time, they had a terrible shortage of English words.
Mm-hmm.
They were making up, they basically, between that process and Shakespeare, the number of words in the English language about doubled.
Mm.
And it was just in order to translate something which didn't have a word for it in English.
Well, we have coming up in a few weeks a gentleman, you probably read his books, Greg Braden.
Yes.
And he has a new book coming out called Fractal Time, The Secret of 2012, and we'll be going into that as well. What research have you been able to do in regards to not only time, but also in terms of this whole thing that's really starting to, the fervor is starting to grow, we're only a few years out, two or three years out, regarding 2012?
The 2012 thing is really fascinating. There's just a lot of people who are trying to talk about that and prepare for it in a way in some respects. It's usually considered the end of the Mayan calendar, although being the end of the calendar does not necessarily mean the end of the world.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Not at all. But things are kind of supposedly coming to a head. There's all sorts of time wave studies. There's all sorts of other things that are going on that cycles upon cycles. And it looks like it could be quite profound, but I'm not totally sure that, you know, if you want to try to ignore it, you might be able to ignore it. It might be a little painful, but you probably could. But if you want to go along with it, it might be very, very beneficial in the long run. I'm not sure what's going to happen, but something seems to be in the mix some way.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've talked with some people, and part of my theorizing, of course, this is on a bigger scale than the Y2K thing 9 years ago, but I almost there's a sense in me that kind of puts it in that category that people are from one perspective, they're making more out of it than it's really going to be, and that it's more going to be of an internal process, that each one of us is going to experience a transformation as we head towards that particular date of December 21st, 2012. And, you know, I just don't know. Maybe we're going to pass through some magical radiation belt as the planets continue to spin around in the universe. I mean, nobody really knows, but again, we're all theorizing.
I think that's exactly right. that's the way I tend to view it, is that it's just, this is an individual kind of thing. It can be extremely beneficial to you. Now, there is always the possibility that the collective is kind of moving in a way so that it's, you know, it's going to be even more profound because of it. And, of course, there's always a chance a comet will come in and slam into the Earth and it'll be it.
Well, right, exactly. And do we really want to know that before it happens, you know?
Probably not.
I just say, you know, whatever the universe has in store for us, we're going to have to deal with one way or the other. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
I find it fascinating, your website in particular, it doesn't seem as though you necessarily reject any particular perspective. Do you have a criterion for what goes up on your website?
Oh, yeah. I don't want to put things up that are just angry or antagonistic to other people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just I don't want rants and stuff like that for the most part. But, what you know, I think it's something it should be, if it's interesting.
Good
I may not even
thought.
Believe it sometimes. I'm not even sure somebody, I've had other people, you know, other authors have contributed here and there. And sometimes I don't end up really completely agreeing with them, but it's really interesting what they're talking about. And they, who knows, maybe they have a better handle on it than I do.
So you're actually creating a community of your own right there on the website, the halexandria.org website.
I think so. We also initiated some forums last summer.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of builds up where it allows people to kind of bring in their own input and things of that nature and actually interact among themselves, without necessarily my being involved. And that's been worthwhile. And so there are quite a few people who kind of gotten into it and really enjoy it, and that's kind of what it's for.
Well, you had mentioned that you have read volumes over the years, just numerous books, and I made the comment that I would have to live another lifetime just to read the books that I've got on my list now, let alone the books that would have come along after I came back. I mean, it would take me several lifetimes, and yet what you do is you bring people in who have read all kinds of other books other than what you've read, maybe.
Oh, yeah. And there's a whole lot of books that I've never bothered to read that are considered, you know, really wonderful and fantastic, but are at least popular, I put it that way. They're bestsellers.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't seem to be saying anything that I think is terribly profound or that just interests me.
Mm-hmm. Right. They don't resonate with you.
And I never know. Most of the books I have read in the last year are probably at least half were people who said, yeah, I'll read this book.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do. And that's been good about 80% of the time. You know, I get a good book. Occasionally I'll just walk into a bookstore, usually at the airport. Yeah, I've got to do something for there. It's just flight.
Exactly.
And I'll pick up a book and, oh, that was good. And, oh, how neat. There's 8 more sequels.
Exactly.
And I get something going from then on.
Now, you have written a couple of books, one in particular you had mentioned before, regarding reincarnation. Why did you write that?
That was when I was, I guess, in my primary metaphysical stage. I was trying to figure out, you know, what is it all about. And I was actually trying to put together all these aspects of metaphysics, everything from out-of-body experiences to near-death experiences, all of these things. How does that work? I mean, it all seemed to be kind of a hodgepodge. And when I first heard some of it, I remember that some of the people, I just looked at these people and said, you're absolutely crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You're just insane. But on the other hand, you're kind of nice about it, so maybe there's something to this. So, you know, I wrote Reincarnation as Making a Comeback primarily because I was trying to put it all together, and ultimately it all fit together.
Mm-hmm.
And about the only thing that didn't completely dovetail into it at the time was probably UFOs.
Okay.
And then later on I said, well, that would work too. It doesn't preclude it. But once you get the other things involved, everything works. They all tie in together. How we view our aura, everything from our aura, you know, that little, whatever that little field is that surrounds our body, to near-death experiences, to possession, to anything of that nature.
So
all connects.
You know, I'm sitting here sort of trying to think as maybe a listener might, how does this guy, Dan Ward, who's got this halexandria.org, fit in with new paradigms? Well, he's the guy that's collecting all this information and kind of putting it together and piecing it together and putting the puzzle pieces together regarding all of these different areas. And he is finding, as many of us are, that It does all seem to fit. I mean, even if it's a loose fit, it still fits. We're not trying to cram a square peg into a round hole here. You know, it is a round peg. It just might be a little smaller, maybe a little larger, but it's still a round peg.
Yeah.
And so we need folks like you to continue to, again, you're doing an enormous amount of research and gathering and talking with people, and you're eliciting greater discussion and, I think, even more thought. And that's extremely important because we've got to come up with some new thoughts because the old ones aren't working for us anymore, or at least not as well as they used to.
No, they're not.
It's fascinating. So the book is entitled Reincarnation is Making a Comeback. Is that the title of the book?
Yes, that's okay. Correct.
Is that still available? Is it still in print?
You know, it's actually on the website at this point.
Okay.
So people, and I'm going to have to do a real quick switch on my phone.
So. All right, I'm going to let you do that. We're talking with Dan Ward. He is the creator of the website, which is halexandria.org. You can get there through richarddugan.com. Go to the radio show's page, click on Dan Ward, and you can go straight to his website, and you can start looking at all the stuff he's got there. And you can also listen to this interview when it's finished, or any of the interviews that we've done here on this program since 2007, September, and certainly would encourage you to do so. And if people want to get a hold of you, they'd be able to do so through your website. You have a link, a contact us or contact me a link that will be able to allow them to touch base with you.
Yeah, at the bottom of all the pages, it's just feedback.
And they can also go to the forums. Now, are you usually there, or do you have a particular set time, or is this something where people will contribute, leave it there, and come back?
No, it's one of those. You contribute, leave it there, you print it in, and
okay.
then somebody else looks at it. And sometimes a particular thread of a conversation will go a month without anything, and then suddenly people start writing about it and getting into it.
How has this website and this pursuit of yours that we've been talking about here now for the last 45, 50 minutes, how has it served you?
Kept me off the street. No, I don't know. It's just made a very enjoyable life.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy writing, and I enjoy reading, and I enjoy thinking, and I enjoy seeing things connect together. That's just a real thrill for me when I see some pieces of a puzzle fall together.
So you haven't laid out a specific hard and fast concrete set of rules and lifestyle, and you're open, you're eclectic, and you're continually gathering more.
Oh yeah, you have to kind of do that. And you also meet a lot of people throughout the world. It's really been quite phenomenal in a lot of respects. I mean, I hear from people all over the world, and some of them in rather broken English sometimes, but you're still listening to them and talking to them, and you connect up with them, and you hear about these various things, and there's something else going on here. One of the people I got involved with, because they like my website, they're doing some work. They're doing some archaeological work in Egypt. There's something called the Labyrinth of Egypt. And this thing is incredible because it's about 3 football fields long and 2 football fields wide. It's just huge. And they think they're pretty sure they know where it is now, and they're going to start excavating, start looking for it.
Oh, my gosh. I love the hedge-style labyrinths.
Yeah.
Above the head type, where you can't figure it out. I mean, I've seen some that are just stones or paths on the ground, and those are kind of neat, but there's something about those giant hedges, and you walk in there, and you may or may not ever be seen again, depending upon if you can find your way out. But people use those for meditation.
Oh, yeah. There's actually a difference, though. What you were talking about a little bit, I think, is a maze.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where you can get lost in.
Okay.
The labyrinth, as we're using it here, is not purely from that viewpoint. The labyrinth is one way in, one way out.
Oh, okay.
So if you go, for example, probably the most famous labyrinth is in Chartres Cathedral in France, but there is a duplicate of it in Grace Cathedral in San Francisco, maybe other places as well, where you go into it as doing a meditative kind of thing. You go all the way internal, into the inside, then you return.
Mm.
You go back out meditating.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of like going down to Hades and returning.
Uh-huh. What I found fascinating here in Santa Barbara, where I live, with my wife, there's a church on the main street here, State Street, that has a labyrinth in the front courtyard. And for some reason, I thought, that's kind of odd that a Christian church would have a labyrinth sitting right out in front of their... because I didn't associate a labyrinth with Christianity.
Well, the funny part about it, it's much more. You need to go to another one of my webpages.
Uh-oh.
And this is the... And it's about the churches of northern France, the cathedrals.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole pile of these cathedrals, and these themselves are formed into they look like the constellation Virgo from the stars there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all kind of laid out. These are cities, you know, throughout northern France. And most of these had labyrinths. They had slightly different designs, but they were always one way in, one way out. This was always a complete part of the Christian process.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was fundamental to their faith in a way. And then over the years, the priests realized that people were doing it on their own, and they didn't need a priest, so they'd get rid of it.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, Dan, it's been a pleasure to have you on the program. We're almost out of time here. We're going to take another short break, and when we come back, we're going to wrap up the program. We're talking with Dan Ward. He is the author and creator of the website, halexandria.org. Stay with us. There's more to come.
Are you sad or angry about past events in your life? Would you like more joy, love, and peace? Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. I'll inspire and help you find your inner strength to regain clarity and balance in your life. Book your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
We're pleased to have Susan Fries of Ecola Termite and Pest Control Services in the studio with us today. Susan, I hear you appeared as an expert on the History Channel.
I got a call one day, and it was the History Channel. It's not every day you can say that you've been on the History Channel. They were most interested in our heat process because that's another alternative to fumigation. The heat method is the only alternative recognized by Consumer Affairs to be on the same level as fumigation. This also sanitizes and deodorizes. It does more than just kill termites.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
We just had yard signs made because I think by putting the yard sign out, the neighbor's going to see, as the person that is asking Ecola to come and do the treatment, that you care. I'm just going to ask all the listeners, if I can't be your first choice, please let me be the second opinion because I want to make sure that you're getting the best you can get. Let me help you make that choice.
To find out more about Ecola Termite and Pest Control Services, call 800-332-BUGS.
I'm Richard Dugan with visionary Barbara Marks Hubbard.
And I think we should work together, you and I.
I think that would be fabulous.
I think you have the same motivation I do. And it is to communicate and to commune with the people you're communicating with. I've met another pioneering evolutionary soul, and I can see that you are a very important person in the transition of our species. You've got the passion, focused passion. That's the way I've been for years.
Join me Saturdays at 3 p.m. for Tell Me Your Story.
If we leave here today, we could be 1,000 miles away. Take to that road, see how trouble that you know and tease out as you go. Oh, walk with me, talk with me, tell me your story.
New paradigms for a new world here on Tell Me Your Story with my guest Dan Ward, the creator of the website halexandria.org, and you can get there through richarddugan.com. That's richarddugan.com. And, Dan, before we wrap up the program, last couple of minutes, is there one subject, is there one category, one area that intrigues you more than any of the others that just sometimes you just can't put it down?
Mm.
Or you just like it all?
I think I like it all. I really do. I guess sometimes the mathematics is one of the things I enjoy a little bit because that's just easier for me. But No, I think it all works. It's constantly looking at different viewpoints and seeing how everything works.
Mm-hmm.
If we just, you know, if we could, you know, kind of get past the dogma and all the other aspects that try to restrict everything to something that was said 2,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just doesn't work too well. And I'm always looking at what's going to happen next, I guess, in a way, but a lot of it is just enjoying what we've got and seeing a really beautiful sunset and everything else.
Absolutely. Final question. Why this? You could be working on nuclear physics or all of these other areas and teaching. Why this?
Probably because it gives me much more freedom to make the connections. Most our societies just don't really go for generalists. They really don't.
Mm-hmm.
And everything's set up against it in a way. And if you really want to be able to have the freedom to really pursue whatever direction you want to go at any particular time, being at a university or any place else like that, where I've done that before, it doesn't work very well. There's so much stuff that's generated just like make work. Everything from committees to everything else. They don't really want people thinking constantly. And yet, you know, if you're going to supposedly be a teacher and other things, you really need to have a lot of time of your feet on the desk kind of and thinking, just looking at possibilities and listening to other ideas and seeing how it fits.
Well, I think it's fascinating, and I know that I've been doing that the better part of my life since my teen years, and searching, that's what I would call it. I've been on my search, and I worked for a religious radio station for a number of years back in the 80s, and I made that comment to someone, and they said, oh, your search stops with this man here. And I thought, well, wait a minute, I thought my search started with this guy, and now I keep going further, you know. So it is interesting, different people's perspectives. And what I see is you're looking at this circle with all of these points on it, and you're checking them all out.
Oh, yeah.
And we're
finding all the little cords that connect them between,
Absolutely. Know,
the middle of the circle.
Well, absolutely. Hadn't even thought about going across the circle, but certainly that can be done. We're thinking outside the box, even if it's inside the circle. And Dan Ward, thank you so much for joining us on the program. Stay with us as we wrap up our program. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, bringing you choices and knowledge of those choices. And Dan's got a slew of them on his website. And he was telling me off air that he's got more web pages that are coming up shortly. You're going to have an opportunity to participate in the forums that are at his website, alexandria.org. You can also link through richarddugan.com, and this interview will be also available up on the website shortly after this broadcast ends here on this radio station. We encourage you to tune in every Saturday. Next Saturday's a special Valentine's Day program. We hope you'll join us at that time. And as always, we encourage you to continue to search, continue to look and listen. Take what you want and need and that resonates with you. Don't take what doesn't fit for you, because it won't feel good, I guarantee you. Until next Saturday at this same time, love to all.